Psalm 13 begins this way. How long wilt thou forget me, O Lord, forever? How long wilt thou hide thy face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long shall mine enemy be exalted over me? Consider and hear me, O Lord my God. Lighten my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death, lest mine enemy say, I have prevailed against him, and those that trouble me rejoice that I am moved. Have you ever felt like David and the things that he expressed here? Have you ever asked the question like he did in the very beginning, will my problems last forever? Maybe you think that your prayers aren't being answered, aren't even being heard, and you ask the question inside, well, is God ignoring me? Do you feel like just every day is a pity party, that your life is just a perpetual pity party? You think, well, I keep trying to get up, but I keep getting pushed down because life just does that to me. I want to pray, verse 3, the very beginning of that verse, but I'm struggling with the process and I might as well just give up. What David learned was that he needed to press on. And the question is, how do we press on when life is pushing us down? And the simple answer is to trust in the Lord. Look at what he said next. But I have trusted in thy mercy. My heart shall rejoice in thy salvation. I will sing unto the Lord because he hath dealt bountifully with me. David said in the midst of all of his problems, all of his troubles, all of his questions, all of his doubts, and all of his fears, that the way he would overcome is by learning or being reminded to trust in the Lord. You know, we're going to look at four men this morning because there are four men beginning in the very first book of the Bible that tell us that life is not just tough for us, but life was tough for them and they found the means to overcome. We're going to look at Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and notice some things about their lives that they're compared to ours that are very important for us. And we're going to look at what they did to overcome, how they learned to trust the Lord. Peter said in 1 Peter 5 and verse 7, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. Can't do that without trust. So that's what it comes down to. This morning, we're going to start looking at the idea of renewing the heart. We're going to renew the heart because we're looking at the exhortation to find encouragement from the examples that we read about in the Old Testament. That is about which the Hebrew writer was speaking in Hebrews chapter 12. And we'll come back to that in just a moment. But let's just get directly into our study. What about Abraham? There is a challenge. Living is a challenge, and Abraham certainly had challenges in his life. There were challenges to his faith, and in fact, his faith invited strife and insecurity. It certainly did. Genesis 12, now the Lord had said unto Abram, Genesis 12, verse 1, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house into a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing, and I will bless them that bless thee, and I will curse him that curseth thee, and in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarah his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran. And they went forth into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. And Abram passed through the land unto the place of Sychem, unto the plain of Morah, and the Canaanite was in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there he built an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. And he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Hai on the east. And there he built an altar unto the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abraham journeyed, going still southward. It was not until Joshua's valedictory address in Joshua chapter 24 and verse 2 that we find one of the reasons perhaps that God called Abraham to leave his family and to leave his father's house, to leave his land. Because the Bible tells us that his ancestors were idolaters. And Abraham would have learned idolatry. Not only would he have learned idolatry from his ancestors, but he would have felt pressured to practice idolatry just as they did. God was going to make a clean break with that and also prepare that promised land, that land that Abraham would inherit. When he had to work with his family in chapter 13 and verse 1, he went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had and Lot with him into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, and he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel and to the place where his tent had been at the beginning. If you look over to the book of Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 11, and look at verse 8 beginning. The Hebrews writer said, "By faith Abraham, when he was called out unto a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, he obeyed and went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promises in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker was God." God came to Abraham and he promised him that land. He promised Abraham something else, Abram as he was then called. He promised Abram a son, but weeks turned into months and months turned into years. And so faith in the Lord caused conflict in the mind of Abram. What am I going to do? Where am I going to find this son? He became impatient with God's timing and he tried to help him out. In Genesis chapter 15, we read that he adopted Eliezer of Damascus. And then later on at his wife's, she being the instigator, he gave birth, he fathered a son with Hagar, her maidservant. And so one can only imagine the disappointment that came to Abram's life when the Lord said, this is not the son I promised you. And even more than that, the conflict that was in the house between Hagar and Ishmael and Sarah and Isaac when Isaac finally was born. So his faith put him into a situation where there was going to be conflict and frustration. Now, the truth of the matter is that Abram brought a lot of that on himself. If he had stayed in the land of his fathers, there would have been conflict. He would have had problems. But where he was in the eyes of the Lord and where he was living, it was up to him to make the decisions to trust in the Lord. And when he failed to trust in the Lord is when problems began to develop in his home. But give him credit, Abraham subjected himself to all of these conflicts by faith. Romans 4, verses 18 through 22. But because Abram had faith, he was also involved in every parent's nightmare, and that is the loss or the potential loss of a child. The Lord had come to Abram and told him to go and to offer Isaac his only son, that is, Isaac the son of promise, the only son that God had promised him. He subjected himself to that pain, but also to the pain of knowing that if he followed through, that it would be by his own hand that he lost that child. And yet when we read his conversation and what he said to the men who were with him and what he said to Isaac, it becomes very obvious that Abram was overcoming this problem, this obstacle that was in his way because of trust. And by trusting the Lord, by having faith in the Lord, he obeyed the Lord. And he was blessed because of it. So Abraham, having faith in God, invited insecurity and strife into his life. But what about Isaac in the second place? You and I are not the first people that have ever had to try to make ends meet. Isaac was challenged by famine. It was not the first time that men had to work for and to search for what they were going to have. When Adam and Eve left the Garden of Eden, things were different. They had to make things work. Abraham experienced the first famine of biblical history back in Genesis 12 and verse 10. When Isaac comes along, Isaac is experiencing the second widely experienced famine of biblical history in Genesis chapter 26. If you look there at Genesis chapter 26, notice just a couple of things that are said. Of course, first of all, in verse 1, there was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham, and Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, to Gerar. we read further that God tells him to stay there in the land. Tells him not to leave. Tells him, I'm going to be with you. Well, that took trust. And so Isaac was trying to do his best to trust in the Lord, even though it was difficult. And when you go all the way on down to verse 12, Isaac sowed in that land and received the same year 100-fold, and the Lord blessed him. Because he had trusted, when the famine was broken, Isaac prospered. But then look, the man waxed great, went forward, grew until he became very great. He had possession of flocks and herds and great store of servants, and the Philistines envied him. Now notice this. For all the wells which his father's servants, Abraham's servants, had digged in the days of Abraham, his father, the Philistines had stopped them and filled them with earth. And Abimelech said unto Isaac, Go from us now, for thou art much mightier than we. And Isaac departed and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar. And Isaac digged again the wells of water which they had digged in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham. And he called their names after the names which his father had called them. He came into a land trusting, or stayed in a land trusting in the Lord, even though he came in time of famine. And they even had to fight for the water they were going to drink. Some people think, well, it's just so hard to make ends meet. Well, with our economy, it's getting harder every day, isn't it? We're not having to fight for the water that we drink. But Isaac stayed. Isaac obeyed. Why did he do it? He did it because he trusted in the Lord. The Lord told him that he would be with him. What about Jacob? In Jacob, we see the challenge of fear and frustration. He had taken Esau's birthright by deceit, and Jacob feared for his life. Look at Genesis chapter 27. Look at Genesis 27, 38 through 42. Esau said unto his father, Hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, Behold, thy dwelling shall be with the fatness of the earth, of the dew of the mountain from above. And by the sword thou shalt live, and shalt serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have dominion, thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, The days of mourning for my father are at hand, then I will slay my brother Jacob. And these words of Esau, her elder son, were told to Rebekah, and she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said unto him, Behold, thy brother Esau is touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing or planning to kill thee. And so she sends him away. She sends him to Laban, her brother in Haran. So Jacob is afraid. He runs away from home, not in the classic sense, but he leaves because he's afraid of his brother. And when he meets his brother later on, and he's terrified. And what a brave young man he is. He puts all the women out first. Wow. Jacob is afraid. Fear was something that challenged him. But in Genesis 28 and verse 17, the first night that he was away from home, listen to what happened. He was afraid. Well, backing on up, the Lord stood above this ladder that had appeared, verses 12 and 13. And he makes this promise in verse 14. He said, Thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, to the east, to the north, and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Now notice, And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken of thee. Jacob awaked out of his sleep and said, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. And he was afraid and said, How dreadful is this place! This is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. You just have to wonder, when all of these things are happening to Jacob and the Lord is speaking to him and he's remembering what he had done to his brother and the reason he's out there in the first place and all of these things, here's a man that had to have a guilty conscience. And he's still afraid. But the Lord said, I'm going to be with you. And he renewed that promise that he made to Abraham and made to Isaac. Why would Jacob go on to do the great things that he did? because he trusted in what the Lord had said. He had problems, but he also had promises. But then there's frustration. He did what his mother said, and he went to the house of Laban, and he agreed that there was a beautiful daughter there named Rachel. And he agreed to work 7 years for her, and so he did. But then his future father-in-law deceived him, and that night, after the 7 years, he consummated his marriage by deceit with her sister, Leah, that wasn't who Jacob wanted for a wife. You know, people often say what goes around comes around. Have to wonder if he realized, you know, now maybe I know a little bit more about how my father felt when I deceived him, when I made him think that I was my brother. Because the heartbreak of deceit had now come to settle in the heart of Jacob. Jacob went on to work another 7 years for Rachel, the one that he truly loved. Finally, what about Joseph? Joseph was challenged by some interesting family dynamics. For the sake of time, I'm not going to read all of these, but I'm going to mention this. In Genesis 37, verse 3, he was plagued by the family dynamic of favoritism. Favoritism. In Genesis 37, verse 4, hatred. In the second part of verse 4, emotional abuse. In Genesis 37, verses 5 through 11, jealousy. Verses 18 through 20, manipulation. Verses 22 through 24, physical abuse. Verses 25 through 28, the selling of a sibling into slavery. Verses 29 through 35, a lifetime of ongoing deceit. You know what happened to Joseph? Joseph went from being his father's pet to being a possession of in a Midianite caravan, to be taken to become a slave and a servant in the house of Potiphar, then to be a person put in prison. But in all of this, Joseph did not give up. Why did he not give up? Because though he did not understand, he trusted the Lord. He had trust. He became Pharaoh's right-hand man. When you go back and look at all of it and you put it all together, it was all because of family, God's providence. But it was because of family, because he became Pharaoh's right-hand man to save his family so that that people could be led back, could be saved, eventually to go back to the promised land. A lot of years of history involved there. But the only point I'm trying to make is when you look at all four of these, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph, you look at the promises that God had made and then the problems that they had, but you look at their persistence and perseverance. The reason that they overcame and the reason they're mentioned in Hebrews 11 is because they trusted in the Lord to work it out. To work it out eventually, to work it out when they didn't understand, to work it out when it hurt them. To work it out when problems came to cause them to grow and to be better and to mature and to fulfill God's overall plan, not only in their lives, but in the lives of a nation. Well, that was them. But that's not us, right? Let me just mention something. It's intriguing, the correlation that there is between our lives and theirs in a lot of ways. Every one of the ones that we mentioned, they had to work through the same problems, same kinds of problems, categories of problems that we do today. Insecurity, strife, confusion, disappointment, worry, fear, frustration, dysfunction. They were different people. They lived thousands of years ago. But the problems they faced were the same. This makes God's solution to their problems even more interesting in the face of their troubles. He made three of them a promise, which was also known to and trusted by the fourth. When Abraham moved and then had to help his family to adjust to their new circumstances, God met him with a promise. He said, I'm going to give you this land. He had told him, you come out from that idolatrous family that you're in. of which you are a part. I'm going to give you this land. 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 17, God says in regards to idolatry and worldliness in general, "Wherefore come ye out from among them, and be separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." Has he not made us a promise? Well, what about Isaac? When Isaac struggled to provide for his family, God reassured him, Genesis 26, 3 through 4, that if he trusted him, that things would be right, that they would be all right. Well, what has the Lord told us? "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." Matthew 6 and verse 33, hasn't he made us a promise? Well, what about Jacob? Jacob wrestled with both fear and frustration, and God offered him hope. Has Jesus not offered hope? "Let not your heart be troubled," he told his disciples. "You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. And I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also." Jesus said, "Trust in me. I'm making you a promise." It was a better promised land. He promised the land of Canaan to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Joseph remembered that. He told his family, "When I die, you take me back. You bury me there. You get my bones and you take them back and bury me in that land." But the Lord has promised us the spiritual promised land that we call heaven. Joseph never received it, but he believed in it. Genesis 50, verses 24 and 25. Well, what did Paul say in 1 Thessalonians 4, 13 through 17, and verse 17 in particular? He talks about when the Lord comes, that we which are alive and reign shall be caught up together with them. That is, those whose spirits he has brought with him, they have been resurrected. We will be joined with them, and so shall we ever be with the Lord. Wherefore, comfort one another with these words. Now, if we're always going to be with the Lord, where is the Lord going to be? The Lord's going to be in heaven. If we're ever going to be with the Lord, we're going to be with him in heaven. He's made us a promise, a better promised land. It's a question of trust. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Joseph, they all trusted in the Lord. Each of these men, because of their trust, they found the courage to press on. The courage to press on. Turn back over to Hebrews chapter 10. Look at Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 23. "Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for he is faithful that promised." What is he doing? He's encouraging us to do like these men did. So what is the commentary that we find from the Hebrew writer? He points to these men of the Old Testament. And if you look very carefully, you'll find in Hebrews 11, he gives a list of them. But notice in Hebrews 11, verse 8, and then verses 17 through 19, he talks specifically about Abraham. In chapter 11 and verse 20, he talks specifically about Isaac. In chapter 11 and verse 21, he mentions Jacob, and then in verse 22, and then Joseph. And what did he tell us? He tells us these are men that are the examples that we should see that would encourage us to press on. Look at chapter 12 and verse 1 again. "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses," who are they? Well, some of them were Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. "Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us." The Hebrews writer here explains that through their problems, that because of God's promises, that through their problems and their persistence and God's satisfaction with them, that we can renew our heart because we're reminded that God does keep his promises. The word patience is a composite word of a preposition hupo, which means under, and the noun meno, which means to remain under. It carried the idea of remaining under the weight or under the pressure of something. So we're going to remain under the weight and under the pressure of things that happen in this life. But he says, let us run with patience. Let us endure it. Let us get through it. How are we going to do that? How are we going to press on? It's by trust. Just like David said, to succeed, we're going to have the faith of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is the kind of faith that allows us to press on with life because it renews our heart. Each one of these individuals about whom we've read this morning could have become situationally depressed because of their trust in God and His promises, but they found the courage to press on. I mentioned situational depression because things happen in life that bring us down. We get gloomy sometimes. We have blue days, situational depression. But someone has said, you know what, if you take the D and the E off the front of that word and you take the I out of the middle, you know what you end up with? You end up with these two words, press on. As we've said from beginning to end, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, they were able to press on. Why? Because they trusted in the Lord. When life knocks us down, and it will from time to time, we have two choices. We can either give in to that situational depression, or we can choose to press on, like the men that we've studied this morning. The first choice is easy, and it's almost expected because things blindside us, and it does discourage us, throws us for a loop, some people would say. That's expected. But the second response, that is choosing to press on, that's the hard one. But it's the only one that will lead us to true peace and progress. It is the only one that will renew our heart. As we've seen tonight or this morning, God has provided and promised us a spiritual promised land. God promised the land of Canaan to Abram's descendants, and yet he trusted God anyway. He was never going to live in that land as were his descendants. Oh, he lived there, but not when the land had been fully conquered. But he trusted God anyway. Jacob trusted in God. Isaac did. What does God call upon us to do? He calls upon us to leave the world and to journey toward that heavenly promised land. Our faith will be tried, but when we trust His promises, we will be rewarded. And as we see from all of these passages that we have looked at in the book of Hebrews this morning, if we trust like they did, it will bring renewal to our heart. It will give us courage to move forward once again. Are you on that way toward heaven? You see, when God called Abram, Abram still had to leave his father's house and his homeland, his people, those idolatrous people. Have you made the decision to repent of sin as Jesus taught that we must in Luke 13, 3 and 5? It's commanded to all men, Acts 17 and verse 30. Would you do that by faith because you trust in the Lord? And when you do that, would you not be ashamed of Him? Would you be willing to confess Him as He said that we must, Matthew 10, 32 and 33, and to be buried with Christ in baptism, to have that forgiveness of sin? Do you trust the Lord? If so, then you'll do what He told you to do. If as a child of God, we haven't been faithful, we need to come back. Surely we get discouraged, but we can find renewal of the heart in those illustrations, those examples that God has provided for us. And that's what the Hebrew writer is telling us. Hebrews 12 and verse 1. Look at what those guys did. And you can do it too. If you're subject to the gospel invitation, would you come as we stand and as we sing?